Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we open our show with the latest on efforts to provide relief for consumers from rising gas prices after a ban on Russian oil imports. Then we'll tell you about some big news impacting Santee after a judge blocked the Finita Ranch housing development due to wildfire danger. On our Capitol Report, hear about a bill to save the U.S. Postal Service that's now heading to President Biden's desk for signature, and about another bill to expand health care for veterans to cover exposure to toxins such as those released in burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. Hear how your local representatives voted on these important measures and who opposed these bipartisan reforms. Spring Valley parents will want to listen up for a report on three separate incidents of men who attempted to lure young girls into their vehicles on our Crime Beat report today. The state has dropped its mask mandate for schools, and we'll have the tales. Plus, hear how the county has changed its contact tracing priorities and why many people exposed to COVID-19 locally won't be getting notified now. From Public News Service, we'll have some national news headlines, including Vice President Harris's visit to NATO allies, an update on inflation, and the federal government's announced plans to drop mask mandates on airplanes starting in mid-April. Local comedian Rusty Nails, also known as Russ Stalnack, a local icon who was also a charity auctioneer, actor, and musician, has died, and we'll have a look back at his life on today's show. The June primary election is coming up, so be sure to check your voter registration. We'll have more info for you from California News Service. A troubling new report on white supremacy includes three local groups, and we'll have details on today's show. Then on Destination East County, hear about the top festivals and events coming up, including St. Patrick's Day celebrations, spring festivities, historical reenactments, food and wine festivals, and more. We'll also have tips on how to attract hummingbirds and butterflies to your garden. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
President Joe Biden has announced a ban on importing Russian oil, gas, and coal due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. A poll by Quinnipiac University, released Monday, found that 71% of Americans support a ban on Russian oil, even if it causes steep rises in gas prices. That includes two-thirds of all Republicans surveyed, or 66%, as well as 82% of Democrats and 70% of Independents. Pain at the pump is being felt locally. The average price for gas has skyrocketed to $5.60 per gallon as of Thursday, nearly 91 cents higher than a month ago, and nearly $1.80 more than a year ago, according to AAA and Oil Price Information Service. Gas prices had already risen worldwide as economies emerged from the pandemic and the resumption of travel fueled demand. But now the war in Ukraine has sent prices soaring for 15 consecutive days, NBC7 reports. Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy, which provides price info on over 150,000 gas stations, calls the price spike the cost of choking off Russia from energy revenue. President Biden, in announcing the newest sanctions on Russia, also warned oil and gas companies against profiteering or price gouging. In his State of the State speech on Wednesday, California Governor Gavin Newsom promised to work with the legislature to put money back into the pockets of Californians to address rising gas prices. The plan would be for a rebate that could total billions of dollars for California residents who own vehicles. Supervisors Joel Anderson and Jim Desmond have launched a petition for consumers to sign. It asks county supervisors to vote to ask the state to suspend the gas tax temporarily. The gas tax revenues are used to build and maintain highways, roads, and bridges statewide. Supervisor Anderson says no one should have to choose between paying their monthly bills and affording to put gas in their car. He notes that according to the state's legislative analyst, using 15% of the state's budget surplus would provide about $6.8 billion that could be used to lower gas prices by 51 cents a gallon statewide. A nonprofit San Diego group is stepping forward to help people in need right now. The People's Association for Justice Advocates, led by Shane Harris, has launched the Gas Me Up program to provide free gas distribution to people most hurt by high gas prices. Harris has also called on the governor to declare a state of emergency due to crisis at the pump. His organization has raised over $15,000 as of our show taping deadline, enough to allow the group's volunteers to pump nearly $55 of gas into more than 300 cars during the program's launch at an ARCO station. The People's Alliance for Justice Advocates is joined in the free gas effort by other organizations, including the Central San Diego Black Chamber of Commerce, the Chaldean Coalition, Heartland Youth Build, and San Diego Food Bank, which will also distribute food to those chosen to receive free gas. You can donate to the Gas Me Up Fund, volunteer, or sign up to receive free gas at pajmovement.org/freegasevent. Again, that website is pajmovement.org/freegasevent. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Miriam Raftery with a local government report from Santee. Citing wildfire evacuation concerns, San Diego Superior Court Judge Catherine Bacall has ruled that the City of Santee and the City Council violated state law in approving Finita Ranch, HomeFed's long-planned 3,000-home development. The project would be built on more than 2,600 acres of fire-prone hillsides in the city's northwest section. The ruling found that the city's environmental review of the project was inadequate, violating California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, by failing to adequately disclose how the development would affect wildfire evacuations and safety in the surrounding community. The judge also slammed the city for its last-minute removal of the Magnolia Avenue extension from the project just 6 days before council approved the EIR, even though that extension had been touted as a key wildlife evacuation route. This was inadequate for public review or evaluation of impacts on neighbors along other connector roads if an evacuation should be needed, the judge found. In addition, she stated, the city's decision not to recirculate the EIR violated CEQA. Despite the setback, Jeff O'Connor, HomeFed's director of operations, says the project will eventually go forward. He told East County Magazine, "We expect to work on a more detailed fire evacuation plan and have it completed, and we're hoping the judge will agree with the new plan. A revised plan should take 3 to 6 months," he says. O'Connor noted the judge agreed with the preponderance of the mitigation measures in the environmental report, including the plans for the gnatcatcher and other endangered species that were also challenged by the plaintiff groups. In October 2020, the Center for Biological Diversity, Preserve Wild Santee, Endangered Habitats League, and California Chaparral Institute sued the City of Santee for violating the California Environmental Quality Act when it approved the development in September. Judge Bacall was particularly critical of the project's evacuation route involving Mass Boulevard and its supposed connection with State Route 67. "It is not possible because Mass Boulevard does not connect to Highway 67 and instead dead ends in a park," she wrote, noting that there are no plans to connect Mass Boulevard from its termination point. The judge also criticized the city's legal counsel for arguing that residents might shelter in place during a major wildfire, noting that the plan fails to inform residents, quote, "as to the risk of injury or death if residents are instructed to remain on site while the fires burn around them," the judge wrote. Peter Broderick, an attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity, states in a press release, "The court understood that in this never-ending fire season, developers can't hide a project's wildfire and community safety risks from the public. This is absolutely the right decision to protect the people and wildlife who call Santee home." And he adds, "This project should never have been approved, and officials across California need to stop letting sprawl drive up fire threats." Richard Halsey, with the California Chaparral Institute, says in acknowledging the need to protect people from the increasing risk of wildfire, the court has accomplished something California's political leaders have consistently failed to do, say no to those who would profit by putting families in harm's way. Van Collinsworth with Preserve Wild Santee also hailed the decision, stating, "Growing wildfire risks must not be ignored. The court's decision rightly requires the rising risks to be recognized." Santee Mayor John Minto says HomeFed will have to amend the EIR and provide a better fire evacuation plan, but even when that's done, he anticipates yet another round of legal challenges, which will only increase the cost of housing for buyers. But ultimately, the project will be completed, he predicts. The mayor says, "I don't look at the ruling as something that will stop it. It's going to happen someday." The ruling follows a series of recent court decisions blocking sprawl development, challenged by the Center for Biodiversity and others in high fire risk areas. In San Diego County, a court rejected the 1,100-home project known as Otay Ranch Village 14 in the Proctor Valley area near Jamul because of wildfire risks, greenhouse gas emissions, wildfire threats, and other environmental concerns. Similarly, courts have stopped sprawl developments in Lake and Los Angeles counties over wildfire safety concerns. O'Connor says the litigation against new developments has pushed the average price for single-family homes in San Diego County to the most expensive in the nation, and he argues that it makes no sense because of the lack of housing. He says, "We have a huge crisis going on in this state and a huge shortage of housing, and when we get this project up and running, this is going to help that." Finita Ranch has been in the works for decades. It was approved in September 2020 by a 4-1 vote following a marathon 6-hour Santee City Council discussion that was held virtually due to the pandemic. Former Councilman Stephen Houlihan, who was now running for Congress in the 50th District, cast the only no vote, and he specifically cited fire concerns. Two council members approved the project despite making campaign promises not to vote on the project until the people could weigh in on a ballot initiative. Last year, the council also did vote 4-0 with Minto absent to put the Finita Ranch to a public vote in November 2022. So ultimately, voters may have the final say. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Coming up next, the Chaldean Corner on East County Magazine's radio show, bringing you news for and about our region's Iraqi Chaldean community.
The nonprofit Chaldean Coalition has filed a lawsuit contending that Chaldeans are being disenfranchised by San Diego County's supervisorial redistricting in East County, where most of this ethnic and religious minority group resides. The lawsuit filed March 4th in Superior Court claims a division of the close-knit community between two supervisorial districts is illegal under the California Election Code. The suit was filed by attorneys from LaMondre and Jonah LLP, a Rancho Santa Fe firm with a specialty in civil rights, against the County of San Diego, its Independent Redistricting Commission, and its Registrar of Voters. The Chaldean Coalition seeks a stay and injunctions to halt application of the county's new supervisorial districts and requires redrawing of the maps. Paul Jonah, attorney for the plaintiffs, says the California Supreme Court has laid out a clear process for redistricting at all levels, which prohibits splitting up a racial minority group. He says the County of San Diego Redistricting Commission, in drawing the county's new supervisorial district boundaries, split the Chaldean religious and ethnic group living in East County right down the middle. The lawsuit contends that the redistricting violates the communities of interest provisions in the Election Code, which includes the equal protection guarantees of the California Constitution. The complaint contends that the commission intentionally diluted the influence and voice of the Chaldean community, with some remaining in the district currently represented by Supervisor Joel Anderson and others placed into the district represented by Supervisor Nathan Fletcher. In an interview with East County Magazine, Jonah said that unlike other groups such as Hispanics and Blacks, which have members scattered throughout San Diego County, what's unique about Chaldeans is that they are a smaller minority, heavily concentrated in a small community. Around 63.4% of Chaldeans live in the El Cajon region, including Rancho San Diego. Another 8.6% live in Spring Valley, just over 4% in La Mesa, and 27% in other areas of the county. The suit seeks to put Rancho San Diego and part of Spring Valley back into District 2, where it has historically been, instead of in District 4. Ironically, Jonah says the redistricting as it stands did not provide equal population in each district. He says District 4 is now overpopulated and District 2 is underpopulated, so putting the Rancho San Diego area back into District 2 would actually make the population deviation lower. The county's nonpartisan Citizens Redistricting Commission spent over a year drawing up new boundaries, accepting community input during the process. State law requires that redistricting must not have partisan considerations, but must have districts of approximately equal population that are contiguous, compact, and don't break up protected communities. The county has declined to comment, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. Vince Catula, president of the Chaldean Coalition, says, "This case is not about political parties. This is about ensuring that all ethnic minority communities, including the Chaldean community, which have worked so hard to find a voice in the United States, are protected, respected, and heard." San Diego's Chaldean community began 71 years ago, with the first Chaldean San Diego immigrant arriving in 1951. In 1973, Chaldean families organized the first local Chaldean parish in El Cajon, named St. Peter's. Throughout the 1970s, greater numbers of Chaldean immigrants began arriving in San Diego. In that decade, the president of Iraq tried to force Chaldeans to give up the Chaldean Aramaic language, passing laws prohibiting its teaching in public schools, and tried to forcibly impose Arabic instead, causing many Chaldeans to leave Iraq. The Iraq wars in recent decades brought many Chaldean war refugees to our region, where over 60,000 Iraqi Chaldeans are now estimated to live in East County alone. The redistricting process becomes challenging when there are multiple racial, ethnic, or religious minority groups, as in El Cajon and nearby communities, where most Chaldean Christians reside, as well as many Latino residents, Muslim immigrants, and a growing number of African Americans. Some members of those groups also spoke out during the redistricting process to argue against breaking up their communities into separate districts. Attorney Jonah claims the redistricting commission chose to prioritize the Black, Indigenous People of Color, or BIPOC community, a term popularized by Black Lives Matter, over the Chaldeans, a constitutionally protected religious and ethnic minority with a long history in East County. He claims the goal was to dilute the vote of Chaldeans who traditionally vote conservative. Jonah contends this was gerrymandering. He states, "There is no rational explanation for why the commission split up the Chaldean community by having the community between districts, and particularly by excising only one segment of the El Cajon region, the heart of the Chaldean community in Rancho San Diego with St. Peter's Cathedral." He adds the new maps exacerbate the inequality of population between the two districts. Catula with the Chaldean Coalition says his hope is that each and every ethnic minority community throughout the nation that has been recently impacted by redistricting use this case and the work done by the Chaldean Coalition to save their community and ensure its voices are heard, regardless of political views. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. The Postal Service Reform Act has passed the U.S. Senate by an overwhelming 79-12 vote after earlier passing the House 342-92. Four of San Diego's county's representatives voted in favor, as did both California senators, but Congressman Darrell Issa voted no. The Postal Service has been losing money in recent years primarily because it is the only federal agency required to prepay its retirees' health benefits. Officials have warned Congress that if this bill did not pass, the post office could run out of money by 2024, just 2 years from now. The bill now heads to President Joe Biden, who has pledged to sign it into law. Here's what the bill would do. The bill ends the requirement for the post office to pre-fund retirees' medical care, saving the agency $27 billion a year over the next decade. Instead, it requires postal employees to enroll in Medicare, which will save taxpayers about $22.6 billion over the same 10 years, helping to make the post office once again financially solvent. Many consumers have complained about recent cuts in postal delivery service. This bill will restore service to 6 days a week. When the U.S. first gained independence from Britain, the federal government used to subsidize the cost of mailing newspapers to subscribers. That went the way of horses and buggies, phased out as advertising revenues propped up newspapers financially. But with ad revenues shifted to online information sites and social media in recent years, newspapers have struggled and many have closed their doors. So the bill expands special rates for local newspaper distribution by mail. The bill is supported by major entities that rely on dependable postal service to deliver goods, including Amazon, Hallmark Cards, the National Retail Federation, and the Association of National Advertisers, as well as the National Newspaper Association. It is also backed by the National Rural Letter Carrier Association, the National Association of Letter Carriers, and the American Postal Workers Union, among other groups. Many members of both parties supported the bill, which passed with over 75% in favor. However, some Republicans have opposed postal reforms to save the post office, instead suggesting the services should be privatized. But that could leave some postal customers, especially those in remote rural areas, such as parts of San Diego's East County, with no home delivery service at all, since companies would likely cherry-pick the most profitable services to offer.
On his website, Congressman Darrell Issa calls himself a proud veteran who served as a U.S. Army captain. But the Republican representing portions of San Diego and East County recently voted against H.R. 3967, a bill to make Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans eligible for VA medical coverage of conditions due to toxic exposures, such as those released in burn pits. The Honoring Our Pact, PACT, or Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act, passed the House of Representatives by a 256-174 vote. The yes votes included 222 Democrats and 45 Republicans. San Diego has many military veterans, and our region's other four representatives, all Democrats, voted in favor of the measure. Sarah Jacobs, Mike Levin, Scott Peters, and Juan Vargas. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America issued a press release praising House passage of the measure and urged senators to also approve the bill, which President Joe Biden has indicated he will sign. The veterans group states, "This legislation will help the many thousands of veterans suffering from military toxic exposures, such as burn pits, who have inadequate access to VA benefits. It is comprehensive legislation that will address the needs of veterans that are suffering from basic toxic exposures by ensuring that they have the health care and benefits that they deserve. Failure to pass the bill would result in a gaping self-inflicted wound to continue to kill those who served their country," says the organization's CEO, Jeremy Butler. Burn pits were used to incinerate and burn waste, hazardous material, and chemical compounds at military sites throughout Iraq and Afghanistan. A 2020 member survey of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America found that 86% of respondents were exposed to burn pits or other toxins, CNN reports. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Marie Johnson with a Crime Beat report. Parents in Spring Valley are on edge after three separate child-rearing incidents. The sheriff's department has released a sketch of the latest suspect who reportedly approached a student and demanded she get in his car while she was walking to school in the Casa de Oro area of Spring Valley on February 28th. Shortly before 8 a.m., the 13-year-old girl was crossing a parking lot while walking to Spring Valley Academy on Conrad Drive when a man driving a black Toyota Prius approached her and asked if she wanted a ride. She told detectives that she declined and that the driver then demanded she get into his car. The girl said she ran across the street and made it to campus safely, where she reported the incident to school staff. The student describes the driver as a white man between 29 and 30 years old with short, curly red hair and crooked teeth. He was wearing glasses and had a clean-shaven face. He drove a newer model Toyota Prius with a license plate that includes the digits 7, B as in boy, and 1. Again, those license plate digits are 7, B as in boy, and 1. The first incident occurred February 17th near the 7-Eleven store on Campo Road, near the same intersection where the latest victim was approached, though detectives don't have evidence that any of the incidents are connected. In the February 17th case, a 17-year-old girl reported she was outside the store when she was approached by a black man wearing a black ski mask and black t-shirt. He was sitting alone in a black Dodge Challenger and asked if the girl wanted a ride. When she refused, she told the detective he threatened to put her in the car. She ran away to the safety of her family at home. The second incident occurred February 28th near Kempton Street Elementary School, where a 10-year-old girl reported being followed by a black four-door sedan with dark rims. She said the driver was a black man with a male passenger who was white or light-skinned. Fortunately, this girl was also able to run to safety. The San Diego region, particularly the Spring Valley and Lemon Grove areas, are hotbeds of human trafficking. The Sheriff's Department urges parents and guardians to remind children about basic safety precautions when it comes to strangers. Avoid walking alone. If a stranger approaches and attempts to have a conversation with you, do not respond. Walk or run away. Do not accept anything from a stranger. Do not get in the vehicle of a stranger, regardless of what they tell you. Report the incident to your parents and/or school personnel, and most importantly, to the Sheriff's Department. Anyone with information about any of these child-rearing cases is urged to contact the San Diego County Sheriff's Department's non-emergency line at 858-565-5200. Again, that number is 858-565-5200. You can also call the Crime Stoppers Anonymous Tip Line at 888-580-8477. That's 888-580-8477. Crime Stoppers is offering up to a $1,000 reward to anyone with information that leads to an arrest. To send a tip anonymously via Crime Stoppers website or mobile app, visit crimestoppers.org.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. California Highway Patrol seeks public help to identify a freeway shooter. On Saturday morning, March 5th, around 9:40 a.m., a vehicle pulled up behind a white Ford Edge on Highway 94 westbound near Kenwood Drive exit in Spring Valley, then opened fire. The shots injured the woman driving the Ford, which crashed into the center median. Two male passengers in her vehicle called 911. The victim was taken to a hospital for treatment of injuries. According to Officer Travis Garrow with the CHP, the suspect vehicle fled west on 94. Anyone with information or may have witnessed this incident is asked to contact the CHP El Cajon office at 619-401-2000.
School districts across California can stop requiring students and staff to wear masks since the state announced that it is dropping the mask mandate in schools after March 11th. The California Department of Public Health now only strongly recommends that people wear masks in schools, given plunging caseloads and hospitalizations and rising vaccination rates. Jeff Freitas with the California Federation of Teachers applauds the move, but hopes local districts will keep equity in mind when deciding whether to drop the mandate.
Our black and brown communities have been higher hit with COVID rates, higher rates of death, and lower vaccination rates. And the school districts that are serving those communities need to keep that in mind when they're making that decision.
San Francisco schools are keeping the mandate for now, and LA Unified may need to keep its mask rules in place through the end of the year in accordance with their labor agreement. The change brings California in line with recent updated guidance from the CDC. Freitas says the schools need to keep on providing high-quality masks for teachers and students who wish to wear them.
There are many people that have autoimmune situations or higher risk. They need to continue to wear masks, and it needs to be okay. Schools need to create an environment so that people don't feel harassed if they continue to wear masks.
Schools are advised to continue their push to get more students vaccinated and to offer free testing. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
If you've been exposed to COVID-19 locally, you probably won't be notified. That's because the county is following the national recommendation to reprioritize COVID-19 case investigations to focus on people who are at the highest risk of developing serious complications. COVID-19 case investigations are now limited only to people age 65 and older, as well as those in congregate living facilities where the virus can spread at a faster rate, such as nursing homes, jails, and homeless shelters. The county will no longer be contact tracing all individuals, but will continue to support high-risk settings and outbreak responses. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says COVID-19 vaccines are now widely available, and the majority of the local population is now more protected because they have received all the recommended doses. Over 93% of San Diego County residents age 5 and up are at least partly vaccinated. Nearly 82% are fully vaccinated, and only about 55% have received their booster shots. Increased use of rapid antigen tests and the emergence of more transmissible variants with shorter incubation periods allow reprioritizing case investigations and contact tracing as well. The changes will result in fewer case investigations and contact tracing, since the new target populations only represent about 10% of the total number of cases reported. The changes will also result in certain data no longer being available. That includes discontinuing the county's Triggers dashboard, which includes 13 surveillance, hospital capacity, and public health response metrics. That dashboard will be replaced by a new SMARTER plan, which California is now using to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic and prepare for potential surges of the virus or new variants. Though restrictions have eased, the pandemic is not over. Nearly 3,600 cases of COVID-19 were reported in the week ending March 8th. 45 new deaths were reported locally for the week ending March 2nd, and at least 41 of those had underlying medical conditions. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
And I have no question the eyes of the world are on this war and what Russia has done in terms of this aggression and these atrocities. I have no doubt.
In a Europe meeting with NATO allies, Vice President Kamala Harris joined calls for a war crimes investigation of Russia over the Ukraine invasion. Harris met with Poland's president after the White House rejected a Warsaw proposal to transfer Soviet-made fighter jets to a U.S. base in Germany to assist Ukraine. The Pentagon said it could escalate the war, but Senator Mitt Romney and other Republicans urged Biden to reverse course.
I believe there's a sentiment that we're fearful about what Putin might do and what he might consider as an escalation. It's time for him to be fearful of what we might do.
Russia has requested a UN Security Council meeting to debate its allegation the U.S. spent millions on biological laboratories in Ukraine. The Pentagon dismissed the claims. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer hopes the chamber can reach a deal to avoid a government shutdown at midnight. The House approved a stopgap spending bill to keep the lights on through March 15th and give the Senate more time to mull a larger spending bill. Inflation grew worse in February, with the consumer price index up almost 8% over the past 12 months, a 40-year high. And with record-high gas prices expected to go higher, Senate Democrats introduced the Big Oil Windfall Profits Tax to tax fuel company profits. Republicans advocate ramping up production to ease prices. Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren counters it would not lead to energy independence.
If we had been serious about moving off fossil fuels 25 years ago, 20 years ago, how can I do this, 10 years ago, then Russia wouldn't have the power it has today. This is what the whole Russian economy is built on.
Several legislators are considering proposals to reduce state gas taxes. Others want to pause on federal gas taxes. More than 200 people charged in connection with the January 6 attack at the U.S. Capitol have pleaded guilty. Six have been sentenced to prison terms of 41 to 63 months. President Biden is facing growing pressure from his own party to end Title 42, a rule allowing the expulsion of newly arrived migrants to prevent the spread of COVID-19. New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez argues people with valid refuge claims are being turned away.
Title 42 is being used in a way that I think is indiscriminate and that violates the basic essence of our law.
More than 1 million migrants have been expelled under the Trump-era rule. And the CDC is extending requirements for travelers to wear masks on airplanes, trains, and in transit hubs through April 18th. The mandate has resulted in a spike in unruly passenger incidents reported since January 2021. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Prominent local comedian Rusty Nails often said he'd been making people laugh since June 1957 when he was born. On March 9th, the laughter stopped when Nails died at age 64. A longtime East County resident, whose real name was Russ Stolnak, was also a popular radio and television show host, a talented musician, and a celebrity auctioneer for many charities. On his Facebook page, he celebrated, quote, "making a living doing what I love." 91X announced his passing on Twitter, posting, "The 91X family is sad to share the news that comedian, friend, legendary San Diegan, and former 91X morning show host Rusty Nails Stolnak has died. Russ, thanks for all the laughs. May he rest in peace." He grew up in La Mesa along with two siblings, where his father, Russell Wilbur Stolnak, moved the family from Chicago in the early 1960s. He attended Helix High School in La Mesa and soon got his start in comedy in the 70s, rocketing from stand-up gigs in San Diego State University frat houses to performances in Las Vegas. He co-hosted On the Air at KUSI-TV and previously co-hosted the morning show called Nails and the Jet on 91X Radio, as well as KPRI Radio's Rock and Religion, among other gigs. In addition, he hosted The Big Show on the Fox Business Channel, a nationally syndicated money talk radio and TV show. He won 6 Emmy Awards, as well as a Cable Ace Award and the National Speakers Association Comedy Idol Contest. Also a talented mimic, he gained fame for his parody of Anchorman character Ron Burgundy. He was also a corporate speaker and MC at countless events, according to his website, russellsfunny.com. Music became a key part of his performances, in which he often played guitar while impersonating famous singers, though he also performed classic rock with friends. He hosted the San Diego Music Awards in 1992 and 1993, presenting awards to countless other musicians. The San Diego Music Awards posted on Twitter, "Our thoughts go out to his family and many friends. R.I.P. Russ. You will be missed by so many." Former San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner remembers Rusty Nails as a true San Diego legend who shared laughter and joy with all of us for decades. "He was a friend who had a heart of gold," the former mayor concluded, "and always brought a smile to everyone he met." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
The primary election is coming up in just 3 months, so it's time to make sure your voter registration is up to date. A lot of people moved during the pandemic, so you can update your records at registertovote.ca.gov. Ballots will be mailed to all registered voters in early May. Carol Moon Goldberg with the League of Women Voters says the biggest mistake people make is forgetting to sign the envelope.
Be sure to sign. sign the envelope when the ballot is being returned. That has been traditionally the number one reason why a ballot has not been counted.
Legislative boundaries changed with redistricting, so you may find yourself in a different district with new candidates running. You'll find a trove of information on the Secretary of State's website or at the League of Women Voters site, which is votersedge.org. Moon Goldberg says the state takes multiple precautions to make sure the ballots are secure. Each ballot has a barcode, and the signature is matched with the one on file.
But the kind of paper, even the tint of the paper and a watermark is established by the Secretary of State's office. You can't go down to Kinko's FedEx and make a copy of one.
You can sign up for texts that track your ballot at wheresmyballot.sos.ca.gov. The primaries are open. Candidates from all parties will appear on everyone's ballot. And the top two will compete in the general election, regardless of party affiliation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The white supremacy movement has undergone profound changes, as detailed in a report released this month by the influential Southern Poverty Law Center, or SPLC. The report, titled The Year in Hate and Extremism 2021, documents active hate and anti-government groups across America, including those in California and San Diego. The storming of the Capitol on January 6th exposed how extremist leaders can mobilize large groups of Americans and now has coalesced into a political movement, according to the SPLC. Hate is now above ground, visible every day in the media and on the internet, as extremist groups are becoming more centralized. The SPLC explained that extremists continue to organize, but now more selectively given concerns over law enforcement focusing closely on their movements. These organizations typically insert themselves in local hot debates like school board meetings and the anti-masking movement. Journalist J.W. August, in an article published by Times of San Diego and East County Magazine, reveals that one favorite online platform for extremists in San Diego and elsewhere is Telegram, a social media and messaging app. Leonard Trin, with the San Diego District Attorney's Special Operations Division, which prosecutes hate crimes locally, is familiar with the platform's popularity and says local extremists do use a site among others. Experts on extremism say that on Telegram, one sees more openly violent messages that advocate for or valorize acts of terror from groups like neo-Nazis. The latest report from the SPLC is drawn from information gathered by the Intelligent Project, a group of more than a dozen investigators working for the civil rights group. The researchers found the number of groups has been dropping because of changes going on in the nation, but that doesn't mean that fewer people are involved with extremism. In 2018, there were 1,021 hate groups tracked by SPLC. This year, that number has dropped to 733. Those include the infamous Ku Klux Klan, racist skinheads, neo-Nazis, and various anti-Muslim, anti-immigration, anti-LGBTQ, and anti-Semitic coalitions. Trin from the DA's office said, "The issues the report raises are accurate about white supremacists moving into criminal activities more so than other hate groups. San Diego has a number of hate and anti-government groups, three of which are highlighted in the SPLC's 2021 hate map. The number of anti-government groups in the United States stood at 566 in 2020. This most recent report puts the figure lower at 488 groups. In San Diego, the Sovereignty Education and Defense Ministry is listed as an anti-government group. Such groups sometimes deny they are under U.S. jurisdiction. Some members deny their U.S. citizenship and claim the Federal Reserve is not a legitimate institution, and in the past, members have been arrested for passing bad checks, among other crimes." The SPLC said the Sovereign Citizens Movement here has 9,421 members and provides followers with, among other things, information on how to deal with judges and information for pastors. The other San Diego group highlighted by the SPLC report, Sicari, has 1,715 reported members. Like the Proud Boys, Zakari is among the hate groups that defy simple categorization because they embrace a broad range of bigotries, the report states. The Anti-Defamation League describes Zakari as believing white people are agents of Satan, Jews are liars and false worshippers of God, and blacks are the true chosen people. In San Marcos, Co-Certified is designated a hate group by the SPLC. The organization offers an anti-kosher food app and claims the kosher designation is used to rip off consumers. Followers frequently tweet content criticizing Israel and offering blatant anti-Semitic messaging. The SPLC report cautions that more violent rhetoric and threats will persist throughout this year. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Marie Johnson.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Now, if you're listening to our show today, streaming live over the internet, you may not be aware that an ice storm has caused major damage to the transmitter atop Monument Peak near Mount Laguna, and so the station is currently unable to air over the radio airways. Your donations are needed to help get KNSJ back on the air across San Diego's East County, and you can donate at knsj.org. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Now, if you're listening to our show today, streaming live over the internet, you may not be aware that an ice storm has caused major damage to the transmitter atop Monument Peak near Mount Laguna, and so the station is currently unable to air over the radio airways. Your donations are needed to help get KNSJ back on the air across San Diego's East County, and you can donate at knsj.org. This week's Destination East County includes a look ahead at some of the most iconic festivals and events coming up soon and throughout the springtime season. The 29th annual San Diego Latino Film Festival begins March 10th and runs through March 20th at the Fashion Valley AMC Theater. There are many remarkable films being shown in the 10-day festival, including films from filmmakers right here in East County and throughout San Diego. The festival features over 160 films from Central America and the U.S., plus art from prominent Latino artists, as well as daily live music. The full schedule can be found at the San Diego Latino Film Festival website at SDLFF2022. You're invited to a St. Patrick's Day Lucky Adventure at Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures to celebrate and learn some history about St. Patrick on March 17th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Participants can kick up their heels in an Irish jig with jug band music, target sneaky leprechauns at the Ghost Town Slingshot Gallery, see snakes similar to those that legend contends St. Patrick's drove out of Ireland, and venture into a land of leprechaun magic in search of special treasures. Other activities include a petting zoo, crafts, and a gift shop. Prepaid reservations are required. Fort Cross is located in Santa Isabel, just outside Julian. For reservations and more info, you can visit fortcross.com. Hooley's Public House, which was once voted the most authentic Irish pub outside of Ireland, invites you to celebrate St. Patrick's Day on March 17th. Both the Rancho San Diego and La Mesa locations will be open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. with no cover charge. Hooligans are invited to enjoy live Irish music as well as food and drinks at Hooley's. For the menu and full details, you can visit hooleys.com, and that's spelled HOOLEYS.com. Julian Tea and Cottage Arts will be serving up St. Patrick's Day teas March 17th through 21st, both inside and outside, weather permitting. The teas are also available to go this year. The special set menu is a green-themed version of Julian Tea's four-course cottage-class tea, starting with a cup of Irish vegetable soup or house pumpkin soup with Irish soda bread, and then a variety of Irish-inspired finger sandwiches and savories. And for dessert, savor a scone with curd, jam, and whipped cream, and carrot cake. They can prepare vegetarian or gluten-free versions of the tea with advance notice, and there are special menus for children. There are three seating times each day at 11:30, 1, and 2 p.m. Reservations are required and can be made at juliantea.com. The Julian Daffodil Project was started by Sally Snipes in 1990 as a memorial to her father, Jack Snipes, and now there are 4 million bulbs planted in the Julian area. The annual Julian Daffodil Show will be held March 19th and 20th from noon to 5 p.m. at the Julian Hall, where you can see these beautiful blooms. In addition, you can enjoy You Pick Daffodils on Saturdays and Sundays from March 19th all the way through May 1st during Daffodil Days at Julian Farm and Orchard. Daffodils are said to symbolize friendship but also new beginnings. They are one of the first signs of spring and are known in Britain as Lent lilies associated with Easter. Find details at visitjulian.com. Cajon Classic Cruise Car Shows return in the heart of downtown El Cajon, where thousands of people converge to visit displays of classic vehicles each Wednesday night from 5 to 8 p.m. Opening night is April 13th, and the season runs through October 26th. Many attendees enjoy arriving early to dine at local restaurants, including some with outdoor seating. The events customarily also include a DJ with music to liven up the festivities. Find details at downtownelcajon.com. Julian's annual Taste of Julian celebrates the town's diverse culinary delights, proving there's much more here than the community's famed apples. The self-guided tour includes a variety of participating restaurants, bakeries, and tasting rooms for wine, beer, and cider on April 30th from 12:30 to 5 p.m. Early reservations are recommended since this event sells out. Find tickets and details at visitjulian.com. You're invited to experience the history and heritage of San Diego's East County during Campo Day. The event will take place this year on Saturday, April 30th at 4 separate locations all day long: the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum, the Motor Transport Museum, Gaskell Brothers Stone Store Museum, and the Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility. The event will bring life to the community's colorful past, which includes a historic railway, Wild West Shootout, Native Americans, pioneers, cowboy skills, buffalo soldiers, a cavalry camp, and living military history. Plus, there is also an evening dance. For more information, check out visitcampo.com. Vintage Alpine will offer savory tastes from over 40 local wineries, restaurants, and breweries, all in the beautiful gardens of Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs on May 1st from 1 to 4 p.m. Visitors can also enjoy live music and a silent auction. It's all for a good cause, benefiting the Kiwanis Club of Alpine Foundation, which supports services and programs for children in San Diego County. For tickets and a full list of vendors, visit vintagealpine.com. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some plants you can plant to bring in hummingbirds. Everybody loves them. Nobody wants to fill those feeders. They get ants in them. They get bees in them. They get mold in them. And someday I'll convince my husband to quit putting sugar water in them and feeding them, because there's enough in my yard to keep every hummingbird in East County quite happy for quite a while. So what do you want to put in your yard that will bring in the hummingbirds? My favorite plant is a cultivar of a native plant. It is called Galvezia firecracker. If you go to most nurseries nowadays, this plant has become so popular that you can get it. Just ask for firecracker, which is different than Russellia. It's a Galvezia, G-A-L-V-E-Z-I-A. This is a plant that gets to be about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it has red tubular flowers. And that's the key, isn't it? Red tubular flowers. That's what brings in the hummingbirds. They love it. Can't stay away from them. This is a much more manageable and nice plant than the Cape honeysuckle with the big orange flowers and the plant that gets to be 15 feet tall and 20 feet wide and goes everywhere and is a big floppy mess. Try a firecracker and see what you think. You can grow it in the sun, in the shade, in part sun, in part shade, with a lot of water or with just a little bit of water, and it will be fine. I have a neighbor who grows it under pepper trees, and the gardeners come every week and prune them into little round balls, and they never really get to bloom, and those trees have suffered through that for the last few years without a single one of them dying. Now that's what I would call an obliging plant. Another good plant that will bring in lots and lots of wildlife to your garden, and hummingbirds especially, is called California fuchsia. It's called Epilobium. Some of you may have known it in the past as Zauschneria. What a great name. So there's a good password for you, Zauschneria. Who's going to use a word like that for their password? Zauschnerias, or Epilobiums, California fuchsia, are a gray plant, and they have a bright orange-red tubular flower. Once again, great for hummingbirds, really keeps them happy. This is a plant that will actually spread slightly on its own and will get by even if something bad happens to the irrigation and nobody irrigates it for 6 weeks or 6 months. It won't die. It'll be fine. Anytime you go to a nursery, look around and look for the plants that have the red tubular flowers. That's the key to hummingbirds. Now, my friend Maureen Austin, who puts on the Sage and Songbirds Festival every year, says there's two kinds of wildlife attracting plants out there. There's ice cream cones, which we're talking about now. These are the tubular shaped flowers that the hummingbirds like. Or there's pizzas, and pizzas are the flat flowers, the daisy-type flowers, that you see butterflies landing on. If you think about butterfly bush, Buddleia, which brings in all sorts of cute little butterflies, it also is fragrant. It's known as summer lilac here, or butterfly bush. Then if you take a close look at those purple spikes that grow on that bring in the butterflies, you'll see a whole bunch of little bitty flowers. And that's what the butterflies are landing on. That's what they like. So that's a great one. Probably the best butterfly plant that you can come up with, though, is always going to be the butterfly weed, milkweed, Asclepias curassavica. It has orange and red flowers on it, and it just grows like a weed in your garden. Not invasive, just reseeds very effectively. You will know that you have succeeded when you see interesting looking green caterpillars all over the plant, eating every leaf. In my garden, I pick them off and I move them to another milkweed after they eat all the leaves off one. I don't try to fight them because they're going to turn into monarch butterflies. So my garden is full of monarch butterflies, which I consider to be flying flowers. So keep in mind, butterfly milkweed is a great plant to add to your garden repertoire.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617. Or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.